We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough, and that's what we need.
Welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is our podcast from the Conservative Partnership Institute and the Election Integrity Network about all things elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and how and what citizens in America can do to make sure that our elections are safe, secure, honest, and accurate. So today, we're very fortunate to have one of the citizen leaders, one of the best, strongest citizen leaders in America. We're here in Michigan, and I'd like to introduce you to Ron Armstrong, who, what is the title? Is it convener, president, chairman?
President of Stand Up Michigan.
Yes. President of Stand Up Michigan. And we're just so thrilled to have you with us because you are the great example of what citizens can do. So thank you so much for taking some time to be with us and talk about yourself and Stand Up Michigan.
Well, I appreciate the kind words and the invitation.
Well, so Ron, tell everybody a little bit about your background, where you're from, your education, kind of what you've done. Before we get into Stand Up Michigan, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a Michigander, born and raised. I have a family here. We have five kids.
Oh, my goodness.
We breed Arabian horses, so we've had Arabian horses for over 20 years. I started a business 35 years ago that we manufacture displays and exhibits for trade shows.
Oh, wow.
But what we do is specialize in briefcase-style displays that are used for messaging. So we help companies.
So what does that mean?
Well, in other words, we help them equip sales forces with tools that they can use in the field for face-to-face selling that allow the company to have a consistent message that will be not only be able to be displayed consistently, but be able to get measurable results. So you can tell people to do certain things as a sales group, but are they going to convey them the same way? Are they going to present things the same way? And if they don't, then how do you measure results? And so we've been doing that. I'm focused in that area for 35 years. I also served 10 years as a mayor of Newaygo, Michigan, which is north of Grand Rapids. And I've worked in economic development for over 25 years in our area. And so that's how I got involved in that. That's my political side, if you will.
So now, Ron, where is, you live now where?
In Newaygo, Michigan.
And that's north of Grand Rapids?
It'd be north of Grand Rapids on the western side of Michigan. We would call it kind of the bedroom community, surrounded by lakes and rivers, a great trout fishing stream that runs right through the city. And so it is, it's a beautiful little town that obviously has got a good transient population. Most of the people weren't just born and raised there, but have moved there over the course of their time.
Is it growing now?
It is growing. It's a historic downtown because it sits on the river. It was done during the logging days in the 1800s. And so a lot of the logs that rebuilt Chicago Fire came through Newaygo and floated from the Muskegon River down and across the Big Lake to rebuild Chicago. So that historic downtown we helped rejuvenate, and it's a great walkable, beautiful city, and if people are in the area, they would love it.
Might have to put that on the bucket list, huh?
Yes, you would.
So you've been there a long time, and so tell us how you got involved in Stand Up Michigan. Tell us about Stand Up Michigan,
okay.
How you got involved.
You know, it's a story that I think so many have. Because we are in the face-to-face selling business, we do trade shows, we do job fairs, we do everything that you would do after a show or you would do as a small group of business. So everything we did was stopped dead in its tracks March the 13th in Michigan of 2020 when the lockdowns happened. There was no more face-to-face selling.
The lockdowns.
So the day that all of the lockdowns happened with COVID, our business was shut from because nothing that we manufactured, nothing that we served was able to be used. And so immediately it was 3 weeks to bend the curve, right? So that was the idea. So we continued to build inventory and work towards that, but things were slowing down. There was a small Facebook group that was started that was called Michiganders Against Excessive Quarantine. And that Facebook group was one day old when a person who works for, works with our son, who's a sheriff, works a sheriff deputy in Newaygo County, And she came to our house because my wife runs our Facebook group for our Arabian horses and also the canine for our police department in our city. And so they came and said, this Facebook group has grown to 20,000 people in a matter of a day. Well, that was the end of the day. The end of the day, it was over 50,000. Within 2 days, it was over 100,000. And we were over 300,000 members in a Facebook group within about 10 days.
Oh my God.
During the 10 days, and why it happened. So on day one, they were saying, can you help moderate this? We don't know even what to do. We have 10,000 pending posts. We don't have any way to get these out. People were locked in their homes. They were trying to find a way to communicate. And so I literally looked over her shoulder and I saw the numbers and I said, who started this Facebook group? And it was just, it was a chiropractor out of Kalamazoo area, who's not running for governor, by the way. So an interesting side note, but I said, will he be willing to talk to me? And they said, I believe he would. She gave me his number. I called him and I said, you know, I said, God has just told me, I believe that you have two choices here. This can just be a Facebook group. You're against something, or this could be for something, because I believe that people are looking for a way to communicate, but I'd like to get involved. And so this was on day one. Within 9 days, we had a meeting that had 30 people, almost none of which had ever met before, from all over Michigan with all kinds of backgrounds, that began talking about a mission statement, an objective, and creating an organization that would allow people to have a voice.
Oh my goodness.
And that had grown at that point to about 350,000 members. But we had on day nine from that day that that was started, Stand Up Michigan was filed for as a 501c organization. We had our mission, we had our objection, we had our brand guide, all of that was done, and we had had multiple meetings over a period of 2 weeks. But the key was we stopped just regurgitating articles and stories, and instead what we did was we began only posting stories from people. I can't get unemployment. I've never educated our kids before. I don't know what to do with this. I have PTSD and I don't have anybody to talk to. And we began only connecting them with each other. And that was the change. It's what brought those people together. It was as many as 500 or 1,000 comments on a post, because people were just trying to find each other and trying to find a way forward during the early days of that. And then we continued to move forward from there.
Oh my gosh. Do you know of any other state where this happened like this?
No, not specifically. We were definitely the fastest growing grassroots organization in America during that time. And I think part of it was, and if you recall, is that because our governor, Governor Gretchen Whitmer,
she was, so
was the most tyrannical, with almost 100 executive orders from March until April. And we convinced our power of the people, convinced our legislature not to extend the emergency after April 30th of that year, which, by the way, had been 6 weeks at that point.
Was this in 2020?
This was 2020, yes.
Oh,
this
was
the beginning of the pandemic, the beginning of the lockdown. So by April 30th, we had stopped her and stopped the legislature, and she pivoted to a 1945 law that had no limits, and then continued to put all of those executive orders you heard about nationwide. You can't shop for paint in the same store. You can't buy seeds to plant goods. You can go to a liquor store. You can go to certain places, but your small businesses are closed. Big box stores were open.
Right.
But again, it was the small mom and pops that were affected. And we again gave them a voice, and we encouraged the people to stand up, to speak up, to show up, and to actually believe they can make a difference.
Governor Whitmer found a 1945 statute on which she reissued all of the other executive orders?
She added to the executive orders that were in place on day one after after our legislature did not extend the emergency. The way that it works in Michigan is a 28-day emergency, and then it has to be approved by the legislature to move forward. This 1945 law, which was again written during the times of atomic bombs of World War II era, had no time limit. And so she literally took it and she made the statement, I have the power, I do not need you, legislature. The Democrats went with her and literally they shut down all businesses. They shut down bowling alleys, gyms, all of those things during the entire summer of 2020.
Oh,
and obviously then they started to say, we can't get together. You can't gather. Kids aren't supposed to play outside. It was It was literally draconian in the way that it was being done.
It was totalitarian.
It was. So what it did is it rose up a group of people not identified by a political party, but by an ideology that freedom and liberty mattered, mm-hmm. that our Constitution mattered, that our rights and liberties shouldn't be there. But there was fear put on them. They pulled licenses of restaurants. They made examples out of small business specifically, to the point where, rather, it was the barber. If you remember Carl Menke, the barber, he said, "They're either going to arrest me, or they're going to carry me out of here in a casket, or I'm cutting hair because I've been doing it for 50 years." He, by the way, won in our Supreme Court at a 7-0 ruling in regard to him being able to stay open. But the majority of the businesses and people consented and conformed. And that's what we saw happen all across America as they began listening. First of all, it was driven off of fear of the unknown. But once we began to know the truth, then we had to begin to build up their confidence in us being able to go forward together and to literally go against our own government. But that is something that we have a right to do in a republic. Right. And that's what we're fighting for yet today.
So that is how Stand Up Michigan got started. So tell us, that was in 2020. So tell us some of the things that Stand Up Michigan accomplished, because I know that there's some pretty significant actions that you took.
We did. In 2020, we created actual bills that went before the legislature to demand the science and data that our governor was not presenting to us. Not real hospital data, not real science. It was political science. And so we put those through, the legislature passed those bills. We then took Unlock Michigan, which was that 1945 law, and this campaign was born to repeal that law. Mm-hmm. Our legislature, of course, can vote on it, but our governor would veto it. So we have a petition initiative ability in Michigan. And so during the 2020 summer, in July, it was on July the 10th, we launched a petition initiative and we needed to get 350,000 valid signatures. So our goal was to get 500,000 signatures from citizens over a course of 180 days in 2020. That was during their lockdowns. There were no events. There were no places for us to congregate. Nobody was going to church. There was nothing happening. And do you know what happened? We tried to get 10,000 citizens to be circulators, which, by the way, if you know petition initiatives, most of them are done by paid circulators, yeah. and you have volunteers. Right. But we wanted 10,000 citizen circulators. Because of Stand Up Michigan and its energy, we actually got 40,000 people in Michigan to agree to circulate petitions. They literally set up in their front yards. They set up in every community across Michigan. And in 80 days, we collected 540,000 signatures. We repealed the law of 1945. And on the day we turned in our signatures, the Supreme Court of the United States, who was being sued by our legislature, struck down that law and freed up Michigan in October. That was on October 2nd, 2020. What did she do then? Are they done? No, you pivot to the health departments. So it never ends when it comes to the left or their power or their greed. But what it did through this process is it gave that opportunity to bring Michiganders together. During that time, we also held what we called protests for freedom. Mm-hmm. And we held those even though we weren't supposed to meet and greet. But guess what? You could have BLM marches. You could march arm in arm through the cities of Michigan. And our governor was with them, by the way, during those marches. Down the streets, arm in arm, no masks. But if we wanted to get together with American flags and protest against the tyranny of our government, we were being told we couldn't. So we had to change from rallies to protests. And that's what we did through all of 2020, culminating in 2020 in November, where we had over 5,000 people organically show up at an event. So the brand became powerful. It became a way for us to communicate together. And as we headed into 2021, we knew you can't just rally. You can't just show up at a Capitol steps and believe you're making changes. What we heard from a lot of our people is, I feel like you do. I'm joined on social media, but I don't feel anybody else in my community feels the same way I do. And so we knew that the only solution going forward was to create county chapters where we began making a difference in each and every community. And as we said, it starts with you, then it starts with your neighbor. It starts in your street and your community and your county. And we have to change all of our communities one day at a time and one step at a time. And that involves, of course, changing your school boards, changing your county commissions, your city councils, and so on. Because if we don't change our own communities, we're never going to change Lansing. We're never going to change Washington, D.C.
That's right.
And honestly, we're never going to change those things anyway. If we look at those mountains to climb, we have a mountain that we'll never climb over. But if we start taking control over each local community, everything else will take care of itself.
Well, you know, Ron, that is such an inspiration. And the truth is, that is what we're all about with the building the Election Integrity Network. And we've published the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, because my belief is we're never going to have as much money as the left. We're never going to have all the billionaires, well-funded entities that where they had infiltrated themselves into the election systems, the election process. But what we have, if people will step up, we have people, we have patriots, we have citizens. And if we can encourage them and train them and get them engaged in overseeing, just what you're saying about the school boards, overseeing the election process, that's what the Election Integrity Network is. And so I'm just so appreciative of the role that you all are playing and election, trying to bring integrity to Michigan elections, because it's a bit of a mess, isn't it?
It is a mess. And it's been a mess for a long time. It didn't, you know, this basically shined a light on it. Mm-hmm. But we haven't been a part of the process mm-hmm. for decades.
No.
We have literally allowed the left to run our elections, believing that someone's doing it.
Right.
It just doesn't need to be us.
Right.
It's like we're busy raising our family, going to church, coaching our kids,
working,
doing all of those things. And the left is busy with their progressive organizations, encouraging their people to get involved. And this is a call to action for people. Look, we can as an organization head, as organizations like CPI or FreedomWorks or Heritage Action, all of these groups can do what they can to get the word out and provide resources. But if the people don't take those resources right. and convey those through to the huge, we are the majority.
Yes.
We are, however, the vocal minority.
Yeah.
We live in that fear. We're afraid of it. And our job, our responsibility, I believe, both as an organization and your organization, is to provide them with that confidence, with that faith that we have the majority of the people. But we've got to stand up. A perfect example of that is in Michigan. 70 of our 83 counties voted for President Trump in the 2020 election. 70 out of 83. So as I travel Michigan, I talk to them and say, do you understand that where you live, that 68% of the people voted for freedom and liberty? They weren't voting for the man. They were voting for what he stood for.
That's true.
And the reason I said that is that, do you know it when you go to the grocery store that 7 out of every 10 people you run into thinks just like you do, but you feel you're the minority because you watch the news, because you read the press, because you listen to the people that are in your schools, and because our churches have fallen asleep? It is our responsibility to put those people together in a room and begin to, as I say, not only reclaim that freedom and liberty, but proclaim it boldly. Because it is written for there. It's given to us by God. It's guaranteed to us in our Constitution. But it's important for us to go out and live it proudly and boldly. And I believe we need to do it joyfully, too.
I do agree with that. What do people say when you say that to them? Have they ever thought about the fact that most of the people that around where they live agree with them?
It's actually kind of a shock to them. First of all, even people involved in political process didn't actually look at the numbers. They saw we lost by 154,000 votes and Biden won. So therefore, they think most communities voted for Biden. They voted for lockdowns. They voted for masks, enforced vaccinations, and all the things, because they just heard and listened to the media and the news.
Yeah.
And so once you tell them that, it frees them up. And I say, we are the majority. We have and always been the majority. The ones that stood outside these polling places on the day of the election, circling these buildings, voted the way you did. The question is, where did the rest of those votes come from? Where were those people? Because they weren't lined up to vote on election day. They all miraculously decided to vote by mail. They all decided to vote absentee. And so we're going to find out the results of those things. But what we have to do in order to do that is not just watch the votes, but to count the votes.
Well, you know, that is so true. We have to be there with counting the votes. We have to be in those election offices and before election day. That's one of the arguments that I have with I don't know if this is true in Michigan. It's true in other states. But I think it's true in Michigan, too, that in order to be an election official or election inspector, you have to be nominated by the party or authorized. You have to, and that's true in so many states. And so, you know, I have a lot of grassroots people who say to me, I don't want to work with the political party. And I'll say, well, that's fine, but you can't get inside that polling place if you don't have that certificate from the party. So we're going to work with them, and we'll work with the Democratic Party. We don't have to choose. You choose the party.
Let me tell you.
Give you that piece of paper.
Here's how we got around that, because we have the same problem here in Michigan. We created the Michigan Election Protection Team. Guess what? That brand and that logo represents the grassroots organizations all across Michigan. However, guess what? If you read at the very bottom of that website, it's the GOP.
Because they are
the ones who have to certify. But we are the ones running that, recruiting, doing the training. Now, yes, in Michigan, you also have to have them fill out an application. Has to go through the party. It has to, that you have to be trained through a clerk, which means somebody that is there, Republican or Democrat. But we tell people that regardless of a political affiliation, regardless of the brand, whether it's a D or an R above it, it is about us being a part of the process. We all have a right to be a part of that election integrity process. And it was CPI, and it was what you have done at your organization that it opened my eyes to the understanding that we had to start with this. And Virginia is where we got the model from. And that was that it needs to start almost a year before the next election.
Does.
And the fact that Virginia did this 90 days after, almost before this whole thing was settled, is an amazing achievement for Virginia, along with their 45 days of early voting and all of those things. And guess what? In Michigan, we don't have that.
We don't have
early voting. No, we have absentee, but we do not have early voting. And so that obviously is a gigantic advantage.
Plus.
Guess what else? Our election people that are trained can travel. They don't have to be from those jurisdictions.
That's really big.
Which means we had, through the Michigan Election Protection Team, set out to get over 5,000 people willing to sign up. And we got 5,500 as of last week that signed up.
Oh my gosh, is that right?
To serve.
I did not know you'd hit the 5,000 mark.
And we have had over 3,400 of the applications filled out through the party, and they have been submitted this last week. And one great example we had is just in the city of Detroit or Wayne County alone, over 800 people are now going to have filled out to be certified to be a part of the process in those areas that we believe are the most corrupt, the ones that need to be looked at. And we've identified 25 locations throughout Michigan of where we need to really focus on it. But we're going to be in every precinct that we possibly can.
I think that is phenomenal. And it's a lot of hard work to get all of those people recruited, trained, and deployed. And are you doing the deployment and the scheduling? Who's doing that? Is the coalition doing that?
The coalition, but mainly it is Matthew Seyfried, who is the representative. He is the Michigan Election Protection Director through the RNC, representing Michigan like you had in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we have equipped and recruited people who have worked elections and election centers and clerks to be a part of the process. And then we're holding trainings all over Michigan on a regular basis. And a lot of those people will end up being those poll watchers as well. But we know we have to go beyond that. We have to watch these boxes. We've got to watch the machines. We need to see them being tested. We've got to basically let them know and put them on notice from everywhere, from the nursing homes to the places that we are going to be monitoring and watching every step of the way. And we need to be a part of all the process.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've sent letters to the Democratic Party. I've sent letters to the Libertarian saying, would you like to join us? We think that election integrity is not a partisan issue. We'd love to have your involvement. You know, maybe there would be some people recruited and trained who would want to be appointed as Democrat officials, but I've never been able to get any response from any other party.
They train them differently than you train them.
I bet they
that
may.
That might be the difference. And they typically do it through their progressive organizations.
That's
they have
true.
Their own arms
That's
that
true.
Do that, and they target the areas in which they think that their cause or their issue will be done. And that's the difference also with the Republican Party. And I would encourage any of the organizations that are in other parts all over America, is we've got to get our grassroots on the right on our causes and our initiatives to begin to work together. We don't work well with others in the sandbox.
No, that's true.
And it's mostly because we're focused on our own issue. We think it's the most important one. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if it's pro-life, if it's Second Amendment, it's election integrity, you go on, education. These have become the most important things, but we're saying we all have to have consistent messaging. We have to work together. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we've created these groups. Leave your logos at the door. I think that came from you, maybe in D.C. and Virginia.
Lynn Taylor in Virginia.
Yep, Virginia Policy Institute. Incredible messaging. And we continued that through Michigan. We had everybody put their logos on to say, we're behind all of this, but our republic demands that all of us as Michiganders and as American citizens, if we don't protect our vote, then we do not have control over our republic.
Well, and what I was just mentioning to someone, I saw this week that the communist Chinese had put in a candidate to be, I don't know if it's the mayor or governor of Hong Kong, and he won this week with 99% of the vote. Imagine
it's amazing.
That. But that's what the left wants to do in our country. They really want to make sure that that they control the process so that they control the outcome. That's why they've announced this $80+ million program, Clerkworks, to get their people elected at every election office in America.
Our Secretary of State says that all of these drop boxes that were being visited by people day and night that happened recently, her comment was that this is just normal election. Yes, normal election work. All legal, all fine. There's nothing to see here.
Well, you know, I noticed that you talk about one thing that's really important for people to understand, and it's this plethora of left-wing entities, and they all work together. They are all coordinated and everything. And you make a really good point, and that's one of the things the Election Integrity Network is trying to do. We're trying to work with people and help people. One thing I've learned is that we may start calling, somebody gives me a list of groups in a state, and I'll start calling, and they don't know that the other one across the state is even doing anything on election integrity. So we're trying to bring people together. You make such a good, what you've done with Stand Up Michigan, you now have an organization in every county, right?
Well, not every county. We have almost 30 counties out of our 80, but we represent about 80% of the population.
Okay.
We have a lot of very rural counties,
okay,
but we do have them throughout the state of Michigan. We kind of slowed it down because you have to build organizations, and these literally have their own entities, their own committees that are focused on the areas in which matter in their community. For instance, if it's a very farming, rural community and very conservative, then they don't have the same challenges as other counties or communities. So we need them to focus on the areas that are there. The one thing that you mentioned as far as contacting organizations throughout the state is it's really important we don't duplicate efforts.
I think so too.
And the efforts that you guys are providing and the tools you're utilizing need to be utilized by the arm of all our organizations,
right,
and let you do that part of the work. You're the expert in that area. We just need to push and have them follow there, and then we can focus on the other areas that matter. We don't have to redo it, but we even have county chapters that have election integrity groups that aren't necessarily participating in some of these statewide issues, and you're saying, it's all right here.
Yeah.
You didn't have to redo it. You don't have to reinvent that wheel.
Right.
It's been done for you, but I think it's because we've been so not a part of the process. They're all trying to fix what they believe is broken.
Well, we want to provide as much help as we can to everything that you're doing, because I think you have set a real model for citizens and patriots across the country. So I'm just very, very appreciative of everything that you've done. I think that you've shown people that they can make a difference. You can go to nominating conventions and get your candidates nominated, and you can show the establishment that those are the winning candidates and the winning issues. And I think you're going to change Michigan, Ron. I think you're in the process of changing Michigan and telling the rest of us. You give us a lot of hope. Give me a lot of hope, and I can't tell you how much
I appreciate what you are changing Michigan.
That's what
because the people, they're looking for leadership. They're looking for direction.
Because they love America.
They love America, and they love their freedom and liberty.
That's right. Well, thank you so much, Ron. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Who's Counting. We hope you'll listen and subscribe, share it with your friends, and visit our website, www.whoscounting.us. We have a lot of resources there. We have the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure. Download it, print about 5 copies, call 5 of your friends to come around the kitchen table, and let's get busy about reclaiming our elections. So thank you for joining us. Well, I hope you have enjoyed this interview with Ron Armstrong, who is one of the founders and a leader of Stand Up Michigan, which now, by the way, I think he may have mentioned in our interview, has a chapter in every county in Michigan of freedom-loving, dedicated conservatives who are doing their best to shake off the shackles of oppressive government in Michigan. And at our Michigan Statewide Election Integrity Summit in May, Ron was one of the members of the panel of our closing presentation that we try to do at the end of every one of our statewide summits, where we bring people from different backgrounds together on a panel. We sometimes call it our Kumbaya panel. And it's all about working together for election integrity, because we know we have a lot to do to fight the left, and it's better to fight the left than to have infighting among different groups or different sources between the political party and the grassroots. And so we try to close always with the idea that we must work together to save our elections. Well, it happened that Ron ended up as the last presenter on our closing panel. And his speech was so inspirational. And by the end of it, it had our Michigan audience attendees on their feet cheering. And it seemed to me that maybe you might enjoy hearing this presentation that was literally impromptu, off the cuff, that closed out our Michigan Statewide Election Integrity Summit in a very big way. And Ron said to all of them, and now I'm sharing it with you, something that we all need to hear, which is that it is the principles of freedom that we're all fighting for. And that's what we're trying to do in saving our elections. And I hope you will enjoy this impromptu and wonderful speech delivered by Ron Armstrong, the president of Stand Up Michigan, at the Election Integrity Summit in Michigan in May of 2022. Hope you like it.
So I'm going to stand up because I'm short enough if I'm standing. So
I'm going to sit down.
Oh, you're going to sit down. Okay, that's fine. So one thing I want to talk, I've got 3 different things. Number one, I want to talk about Secure My Vote. We haven't talked about that so much. We have an ability to sign back here. The deadline is coming by June the 1st. Understand the most important thing that we can do, our legislature passed it. Our governor vetoed it. This will do the 4 main things. It will force voter ID for Michigan. Can I hear a clap? It will stop unsolicited applications being mailed to people in Michigan. It will force them to identify who they are when they request those by voter ID, by Social Security number, and other opportunities. And it will stop the Zuckerbucks in Michigan. Now, all we had to do was get 500,000 signatures, and I can guarantee you in Michigan, we have gotten more than 500,000 people that are meeting every single month, and I almost swore, complaining every single month about election integrity. Every single month about what should be done, about what we can't do, about how we can't fix it. When this was laying here and all it required from each one of you and 500,000 people across Michigan is a signature. Just a signature. Oh yeah, you got to put your address in. That's all. And do you know that with all of the money and all the funds in the back of the GOP, the grassroots movement, that in a matter of 6 months, we have 180 days, they just have passed 200,000 signatures. That's how inept we have been and how asleep we have been all winter long. And I'm not here only to tell you the bad side of the story, because we only have a few weeks to go.
I got with the people that were part of that campaign and said, we need another push. The last time you did a mailing, there was nothing to tell people it was coming. There were nothing to tell people what to do with them. You never told them where to mail them. There was no support built up underneath it. It was the middle of the winter, besides. It was January, actually, when they did that. So I have just secured, just this last week, the funding to send out another mailing that is going out on Monday. They're going to be getting a letter that's going to go out to 540,000 homes in Michigan. All 540,000 homes are going to get another petition sheet for Secure My Vote and a letter from me. The letter is going to state that we are in the last days. We are in the last days of getting this done. We're going to ask you and ask everybody that you know to have them watch their mailbox. How many people here signed Unlock Michigan 1? That repealed the 1945 law. This one is going to protect our elections. So when this comes to your mailbox, all we want you to do is get your family, your coworkers, the people at the water cooler, at the restaurant, in your church, at the soccer field to sign in a matter of a day or two. Put them in the postage paid envelope and mail them back in, and we can get over the hump and we can secure those four things for Michigan going forward and secure Michigan's elections. Can we do that? That's not inexpensive to send 540,000 pieces of mail, and I can tell you that that was a battle that we had over the last, say, 20, 30 days to get that done, but it is coming. And so literally they will start hitting mailboxes probably midweek this week, by next week. We want to do this in 1 week, so we want all the grassroots, all the organizations, all the people who have meetings coming up this month to tell people to be watching their mailboxes. Send your emails out to your people and tell them, watch them and give us some additional signatures. Because again, if we only had 5% of the people fill out a half a page, we'd be done. That's all it takes. And so if we care about this, and I know you all do, it's why you're here, then we need to take action and take it now. 250 years ago this year, 1772, Samuel Adams, in The Right to the Colonist, said this: if men through fear, through fraud, or through mistake, should in terms renounce or give up an essential natural right, the eternal law of reason and the grand end of society would absolutely vacate such renunciation. The right to freedom, being the gift of God Almighty, is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. The beginning of that statement, if men through fear, were we not hit with fear during this COVID crisis? If not through fraud, did we experience fraud? And when it says mistake, I believe what they mean is a non-understanding of what the consequences are. I believe our own legislature is completely inept from understanding the circumstances that we're in oftentimes. But I also believe that, like Martin Luther King, and I just always switch it around, Martin Luther King says, judge a man by the character, not the color of his skin. I say we need to judge a man by his character, not the letter and the party in which he runs under. It is time for us to start identifying the people, and we talked about it yesterday. It is the primary stupid. Really, right now you were in primary season. It is so important for every one of you to identify, to get on record, to hold accountable, and to get those people to state what it exactly is they're going to do once elected. What it is that they're going to do in regards to election integrity. What they're going to do in regards to securing our vote and to replacing and restoring and protecting the freedoms and liberties of the people of Michigan. Because our own legislators, whether it was through fear, whether it was through mistake or non-understanding, they sat by while all of these executive orders happened, while we followed the CDC, while we followed all these things, while it shut down our businesses, while your kids were stuck at home, and all of those things happened in 2020, and now they're going to use all of that and attempt to use it again in 2022 in order to manipulate the system. But what we have is we have the majority. We are, always been, of course, the vocal minority, because the minority has always been the vocal one to tell us, and we've had the complicit media to go along with it. And as Justice Gableman said, he's turned off the media long ago, because he finds out that it's very discouraging, because you begin to believe it and you hear it from all of those people. And now, of course, it carries through to those that are in our own legislature who repeat what it is they hear, even though it is not the truth. Understand, those people that were elected just come from regular backgrounds. They're regular people. They can't be expected to know everything. But what I do believe right now is that we as individuals have to begin to choose freedom. Understand, yeah, that's good, choose freedom. The reason I say this is the unifying message. It is not about Republican or Democrat. It is not about where it is that they stand. It is about being able to choose, because guess what is great about our country is, first of all, it was based upon, as it says here, on our rights who came from our Creator. Those rights were then guaranteed to us in our Constitution. And it's our responsibility to claim, to proclaim, and to go forth boldly in claiming the freedoms for everybody and our own ability to be able to choose freedom in all things. And I want you all, as you leave here today, to know that where this really starts, with everything we hear and the noise that a lot of this is, the overwhelming information, is that it all comes down to your own household, your own family, your own neighbors, your own neighborhood, your own town, your own city, your own school board, your county commission. Those are what are going to change this state and this nation in not 5 cycles or 10 or 20 years, but if we start at the ground level, we can change it in 2 or 3 cycles. We change who represents us and what they're going to do when they're elected. But don't look at what they run under. Understand that over 70 counties in Michigan voted for President Trump, and they didn't vote for the man, they voted for freedom and liberty. They voted for what he stood for. And what I'm saying that is the people in your communities have to run under the R banner to ever get elected. It doesn't mean they're conservative. It doesn't mean that they stand for the principles that we stand for. So look at the people that are running in your communities, especially at the school board level, especially at your county commission level, and of course your city councils, township boards, and so on. We are now involved in the process. Everybody in this room, if you'd have told me from the time I met Cleta and we even talked about this and we went to D.C. and I drew a group of people to come there, and Josh was there and a bunch of people from Michigan went out there to that we would have a room like we have here, only 5 months later, I would have said it was a dream. But it's a reality, and you've been here for a day and a half. You've taken in more information you can disseminate in probably a week. But what you're finally seeing is that you're not alone. How many people, I can tell you at Stand Up Michigan, the biggest thing we heard in 2020 and 2021 is, I believe everything that I'm hearing, I believe what it is, but I don't think there's a lot of people in my community that think like I do. I feel like I don't want to really go out and speak what it is. And I said, do you know that in most of these communities, 7 out of every 10 people you run into agree with you? They just don't say it either. So I want you to go out of here today, and I want you to feel the energy in this room and the strength that happens for here and the resources that are coming from a national stage, from a state stage, even from our own GOP and from people like Matthew. Those are people that are giving us the resources and the tools for us to be effective, but they can't do it for us. We have to watch over our own clerks, our own offices. We have to elect in the primaries the right candidates, and then we have to go knock on the doors for them. We may not have this money, but we have got an army of ants that can go knock on doors and that can talk to your neighbors. And I can promise you, if you ask for the people's votes from someone in your community, you're much more likely to have them vote for that person than you are to have something come from the outside or have postcards come in their mailbox. And that's what we're building here, is task forces. Forces of people from within your own community that are going to be the solution. And as we've always said at Stand Up Michigan, is the solution has to come from we the people. It will never come from government. Never. So don't wait for it, because it's not coming. But we're changing the tide. We're changing what it is that's happening. And there are more and more people that are coming to the solution that we have now realized is that we haven't been a part of the process. And that's all changing now. So we can stop talking about what happened before when we weren't there, because we have awakened, and we've wakened a sleeping giant. And the idea behind the Choose Freedom is there are a lot of people out here that are not identifying with a political affiliation. They are identifying with freedom and liberty. Leave me the hell alone and let me run my family and my business as I see fit. So go forth out of here boldly and proclaim freedom and liberty for you and your family and your business and Michigan and America. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us. And sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.